Chapter 60. My nerves unstring, my friend, my flesh grows weak. The good that I do I leave undone, the evil which I would not, that I do. Shame, shame on me. Willis, aside to the others, now he will be as low as before he was in the other extreme. King, a king should bear him kingly, I of all, one of so long a line. Oh shame on me, this battle, that you speak of? Spain, of course. Albuera. And many folly? Yes. Halford, many hot hearts, sir, cold, I grieve to say. There's Major General Houghton, Captain Bourke, and Herbert of the Third, Lieutenant Fox, and Captain Zirk and Montague, and more. With Majors General Cole and Stewart wounded, and Quartermaster General Wallace too. A total of 3 generals, colonels 5, 5 majors, 50 captains, and to these add ensigns and lieutenants 60 odd, who went out, but returned not. Heavily tithed were the attenuate battalions there who stood, and bearded death by the hour that day. King, O fearful price for victory! Add thereto all those I lost at Walcheer. A crime lay there. I stood on Chatham's being sent. It wears on me, till I am unfit to live. Willis, aside to the others, don't let him get on that Walcheer in business. There will be another outbreak. Heberden, please talk to him. He fancies you most. Heberden, I'll tell him some of the brilliant feats of the battle.
He goes and talks to the king.
Willis, to the rest, well, my insight begins to cry cupboard. I had breakfast early. We have enough particulars now, to face the Queen's Council with, I should say, Sir Henry? Halford, yes. I want to get back to town, as soon as possible today. Mrs. Siddons has a party at her house at Westbourne tonight, and all the world is going to be there. Bailey, well, I am not. But I have promised to take some friends to Vauxhall, as it is a grand gala and fireworks night. Miss Farron is going to sing The Canary Bird. The Regent's fate, by the way, is postponed till the 19th, on account of this relapse. Pretty grumpy he was at having to do it. All the world will be there, sure. Willis, and some from the shades too, of the fair sex. Well, here comes Heberden. He has pacified His Majesty nicely. Now we can get away.
The physicians withdraw softly, and the scene is covered.
Scene by London. Carlton House and the streets adjoining,
it is a cloudless midsummer evening, and as the west fades the stars beam down upon the city, the evening star hanging like a jonquil blossom. They are dimmed by the unwonted radiance which spreads around and above Carlton House. As viewed from aloft the glare rises through the skylights, floods the forecourt towards Pall Mall, and kindles with a diaphanous glow the huge tents in the gardens that overlook the mall. The hour has arrived of the Prince Regent's festivity. A stream of carriages and sedan chairs, moving slowly, stretches from the building along Pall Mall into Piccadilly and Bond Street, and crowds fill the pavements watching the bejeweled and feathered occupants. In addition to the grand entrance inside the Pall Mall colonnade, there is a covert little air door in Warwick Street for sedans only, by which arrivals are perceived to be slipping in almost unobserved.
Spirit ironic, what domiciles are those, of singular expression, whence no guest comes to join the gemmed procession? That, west of Hyde, this, in the park side lane, each front becleted like a mask of pain? Spirit of rumor, therein the princely host's 2 spouses dwell, a wife in each. Let me inspect and tell.
The walls of the 2 houses, one in Park Lane, the other at Kensington, become transparent.
I see within the first his latter wife, that Caroline of Brunswick whose brave sire yielded his breath on Gina's reeking plain, and of whose kindred other yet may fall ere long, if character indeed be fate. She idles feasting, and is full of jest as each gay chariot rumbles to the rout.
Rank like your archbishop's wives, laughs she, I need my husband's honors. Funny me. Suddenly a beau on his way to the Carlton House festival halts at her house, calls, and is shown in. He brings her news that a fresh favorite rules her husband's ready heart. Likewise of those obscure and unmissed courtiers late deceased, who have in name been bidden to the feast by blundering scribes. The princess is seen to jump up from table at some words from her visitor, and clap her hands. These tidings, juxtaposed, have fired her hot with curiosity, and lit her quick invention with a plan. Princess of Wales, my God, I'll go disguised in some dead name and enter by the little, sly, chair door designed for those not welcomed openly. There unobserved I'll note my new supplanter. 'Tis indiscreet. Let indiscretion rule, since caution pensions me so scurvily. Spirit ironic, good. Now for the other sweet and slighted spouse. Spirit of rumor, the second roof shades the Fitzherbert fair, reserved, perverse. As coach and coach roll by she mopes within her lattice, lampless, lone, as if she grieved at her ungracious fate, and yet were loth to kill the sting of it by frankly forfeiting the prince and town. Idden, says she, but as one low of rank, and go I will not so unworthily, to sit with common dames. A flippant friend writes then, that a new planet sways to night the sense of her erratic lord, whereon the fair Fitzherbert muses hankeringly. Mrs. Fitzherbert soliloquizing, the guest card which I publicly refused might, as a fancy, privately be used. Yes, one last look, a wordless, one farewell to this false life which glooms me like a knell, and him, the cause, from some hid nook survey his new magnificence. Then go for I. Spirit of rumor, she cloaks and veils, and in her private chair passes the princess also stealing their two honest wives, and yet a differing pair. Spirit ironic, with dames of strange repute, who bear a ticket for screened admission by the private wicket. Chorus of ironic spirits, aerial music, a wife of the body, a wife of the mind, a wife somewhat frosty, a wife too refined. Could the twain but grow one, and no other dames be, no husband in Europe more steadfast than he. Spirit of the years, cease fooling on weak waifs who love, and wed but as the unweeding urger may bestied. See them with inside, douce and diamonded. The walls of Carlton House open, and the spectator finds himself confronting the revel. Seen by it the same. The interior of Carlton House, a central hall is disclosed, radiant with constellations of candles, lamps, and lanterns, and decorated with flowering shrubs. An opening on the left reveals the grand council chamber prepared for dancing, the floor being chalked with arabesques, having in the center .3 R with a crown, arms, and supporters. Orange trees and rose bushes in bloom stand against the walls. On the right hand extends a glittering vista of the supper rooms and tables, now crowded with guests. This display reaches as far as the conservatory westward, and branches in two long tents on the lawn. On a dais at the chief table, laid with gold and silver plate, the Prince Regent sits like a lay figure, in a state chair of crimson and gold, with six servants at his back. He swelters in a gorgeous uniform of scarlet and gold lace which represents him as field marshal, and he is surrounded by 140 of his particular friends. Down the middle of this state table runs a purling brook crossed by quaint bridges, in which gold and silver fish frisk about between banks of moss and flowers. The whole scene is lit with wax candles in chandeliers, and in countless candelabra on the tables. The people at the upper tables include the Duchess of York, looking tired from having just received as hostess most of the ladies present, except those who have come informally, Louis XVIII. Of France, the Duchess of Angoulême, all the English royal dukes, nearly all the ordinary dukes and duchesses, also the Lord Chancellor of the Exchequer and other ministers, the Lord Mayor and Lady Mayoress, all the more fashionable of the other peers, peeresses, and members of Parliament, generals, admirals, and mayors, with their wives. The ladies of position wear, almost to the extent of a uniform, a nodding headdress of ostrich feathers with diamonds, and gowns of white satin embroidered in gold or silver, on which, owing to the heat, dribbles of wax from the chandeliers occasionally fall. The guards' bands play, and attendants rush about in blue and gold lace. Spirit of the pities, the queen, the regent's mother, sits not here. Wanting to, are his sisters, I perceive, and it is well. With the distempered king immured at Windsor, sore distraught or dying, it borders nigh on indecency in their regard, that this loud feast is kept, a thought not strange to many, as I read, even of those gathered here. Spirit ironic, my dear phantom and crony, the gloom upon their faces, is due rather to their having borrowed those diamonds at 11% than to their loyalty to a suffering monarch. But let us test the feeling. I'll spread a report.
He calls up the spirit of rumor, who scatters whispers through the assemblage.
A guest, to his neighbor, have you heard this report, that the king is dead? Another guest. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.